right? Confirmed.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So see, Thomas Schuker, yeah, finally joining, so solving the problem. Thanks, Nico. Hello, everybody. I apologize for this problem. We'll fix for the next cafe club. Today, it's a pleasure to have with us Klaus Dolag. As usual, I'd like to remind a bit of his bio. Well, he graduated at the MPA 20 years ago, he would say, and then he did a postdoc. He's continued as postdoc at the MPA, and then did a postdoc at the University of Padua, and then another postdoc at the MPA. Since 2010, he's a staff member of the Computational Astrophysics Center at the Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich. And since 2017, he's leading the Computational Center for Particle and Astrophysics, obtaining very recently an EOC Advanced Grant, who is at the center of the today talk. So please, Klaus, welcome.
Okay, so many thanks for inviting me here. And you know, in these days when you have to give these talks, it's usually much less lively than you have when you are there in person. So please, at any point, interrupt me, ask questions. Oops. I also try to be a little bit provocative in between to trigger some discussions. And what I want to show you a little bit is what we know from simulations on the complex life of galaxy clusters, but also touch and remind people why we want to do that for cosmology sometimes. So I hope I was able to mix in a little bit of everything and also allow you then to have a lively discussion at the end. So again, just to start with a fun fact. There was recently a very interesting paper which was comparing the structures you see in the universe, so cosmological simulations, with the structures of the human brain. And the interesting thing is that if you look at the power spectrums of the structures, then the cosmic web shows a very similar power spectrum than the neurons in your brain. And you might think, okay, that's maybe trivial or something like that, but if you compare that with any turbulence or other fractals you see in leaves or everything, they typically look significantly different. So that's, so to speak, one connection of cluster and life. And it also reminds once on that if you look at the power spectrum of the spheres, then that is not necessarily the information which is the most meaningful at the same time. So here, just as a reminder, this is comparing a cosmological simulations on the left side and a random field on the right side, which have exactly the same power spectrum. So I would go even and say the most interesting information in our cosmology is in the phases and not in the power spectrum itself. So maybe that is a kind of thing which can trigger discussion. So now what you want to do is, and that is a computational challenge when you want to understand structure formation and galaxy clusters and galaxies and their evolution, is that starting from the small density fluctuations you see in the CMB or you infer from the CMB, you want to understand how these structures grow. And this problem is not trivial because, of course, you have the largest scales, but then you can go to smaller and smaller scales and the structures get more and more complex and interlinear. And at a certain point, you always have limited computational resources. So you have at a certain point to place in some what is called subgrid models, which then describe all the physical processes, which in reality are super complex, and they are for every of these kind of steps. Here there are people who do very detailed simulations and trying to understand details, but you hope that at a certain point you can cross-grain that and try to at least describe the imprint on the larger structures in some kind of models. Now, where we are in this game, and that is a kind of plot where you see how this kind of cosmological simulations evolved over the last decades even. So here is when the simulation was done, in which years, and that is the number of resolution elements. And you can see here all your best friends, you know, all from literature. And you can see that we managed to increase the simulation. And here's the blue points where simulation without the treatment of the black holes, and the red ones are all which now also feeds the feedback of AGNs and black holes. And you can see that now everyone agrees on that. It's super important to have that in. And you can also see that we managed to grow recently over the last decade. And therefore, we reached a range where we can learn a lot on the structure formation, and we have enough dynamical range to connect scales, which is very important. You can plot that also in a different way by plotting the mass of the most interesting, most massive structure in your simulation versus a resolution. And here I used as a unit of resolution the number of stellar tracer particles you have in the simulation in a typical Milky Way galaxy, just to give the number a little bit more handy. And you can see that here, of course, you have size versus resolution, and your computation effort is going in a kind of diagonal in that diagram. And you can see that again, all the simulations you might have heard of here are roughly populating this diagonal way, which is basically the limit of computations you can do. And later on, I will show you some first attempts to really go significantly up in this diagonal to study very massive galaxy clusters with relatively high resolution. Now, every talk should contain one slide which you never saw before, and I hope that is my contribution to that. So when you do this simulations and you run these simulations on the HPT centers, and here this largest simulation of our set here is even run on the whole supercomputing unit here in Munich at that time. And so what you get from them at the end of the day, when you run for a couple of days here, you get from them this kind of graph, which is shown here, which shows the power consumption as function of time while you're doing the simulations. And the interesting unit here is that, you know, you almost reached here megawatt in scales. But the kind of interesting thing here is that you can see even from the power consumption what your simulation currently is doing. So you see when nodes are failing and the system is not running optimal. But even if it's running optimal, you see exactly when the system is doing checkpointings or when there are global time steps. So all this kind of fine-scale structure you see is really the complexity of your simulation just in the power output. So just to show you one plot, which might be not so usual when you see that. Now, the provocative part now, if you look at that simulation, it might look very boring, right? So that is the simulation. It's a several gigaparsec large volume, and you see at high redshift you start the structures forming. But then if you look how it evolves, and here's a very handmade, very simple movie, and you can see the structure growing, and you can see that it's basically super boring. So all the structures is basically growing at that scales by just increasing the contrast, but there's nothing really spectacular here. And you know, you use the full supercomputing center for several weeks to make that. But then to make it, of course, looking a little bit more interesting, you look in the parts where the nonlinear stuff is going on, and that is, of course, much more interesting. So again, just to give you a feeling, when you start now for this very large box, you can zoom in here on the most massive clusters, which in reality is even a part of a very large scale supercluster structure. You can zoom into the central most massive cluster of that structure. And then you can switch from the gas distribution here even to the stellar distribution. And you can see that you start to resolve galaxies. And here's a massive central BCG, if you look at that, here's a color code is even according to the age of the individual star particles. You can see even here streams and other dynamical features. So these simulations now really span a very large dynamical range where you can go from the large scales down to the properties of the individual objects. Now, you might ask the question, okay, if we take these clusters, and we are mostly interested in clusters, often in cosmology, what do they tell us, and how good are they as cosmological probe as we hope? And the interesting thing here is, even if you look at kind of first order properties of clusters, like here you have the mass of the galaxy cluster versus the amount of gas which is inside, and from the cosmological baryon fraction you have in the simulations, you would expect if it's a closed system, it should be on this gray line. And you can see that very massive galaxy clusters, of course, as we know, are coming very close to that line. But then if you go to smaller and smaller structures, you get significantly deficit in this hot gas, and that is related to the conversion of that material into stars and also to feedback which is evaporating that. And now you would say that that is something which is basically the first order and should be very simple to obtain. But the point is that when people looking on galaxy formation, so people coming from that direction, they typically look at the curve which is shown here on the lower right, which is this what is called the baryon conversion efficiency. So that's the question. If you have this gray reservoir, in principle, how many stars are you forming out of that? And there's this very interesting fact, of course, that at roughly the Milky Way-like mass, you have the maximum of stars you form. So that is the galaxies which most efficiently form stars. But when you look at these curves, you very often ignore, you try to trim to these kind of curves, which has very large uncertainties, and also at the very high mass, typically people coming from galaxy formation don't take too much effort in checking there. And again, you see here various different simulations on the market, as you saw before, and they give already quite different predictions here. But that is also reflecting in super different predictions here in the gas fraction. So again, in the upper right plot here, you see the mass, and you see the now the relative gas to the cosmic budget. And you can see that here, again, a lot of data points, but a lot of different simulations. And even this kind of first order of predictions is typically not so easy reached. And that is basically now all related to your description of how stars are forming and all this basically star formation and subgrid model. Now, you can even look in detail in how the gas is distributed. So here is a comparison of how the gas is distributed within galaxy cluster compared again to observations. And here just the curves from our magneticum and from Elastis TNG's simulations. And again, you can see that there are differences, and the differences are coming from mainly the fact that all the galaxy clusters are coming typically in two different flavors. On one hand, you have cool core clusters, and on the other hand, you have some more non-cool core clusters. So that's one way of classifying galaxy clusters. And the interesting thing is that now, in the past, that was very difficult to get even this two population of clusters in the simulations. But nowadays, with the newer simulations, you start to better get this kind of dichotomy of galaxy clusters. And what is here plotted is different ways of measuring this kind of different galaxy cluster types. So you can look at the temperature jump from the center to the outside. You can look at the absolute central density. You can look at the central entropy. That's something which often done, or at the cooling time. And you can see that these clusters here give a continuous distribution among these quantities. And the dashed lines which are plotted in here are typically observed thresholds which are used by observers to classify these clusters as cool core or non-cool core. And you can see that these simulations are now reproducing a very interesting population of both types and both distributions. And you can now look at different aspects of that. So the interesting thing is that this distribution is not fully homogeneous. So basically, if you look at the histogram of points along these diagonal lines here, you see that you get a kind of at least mildly by model distribution. And then you can say, okay, if I check now galaxy clusters which are clearly cool core or clearly non-cool core, you can look at the individual profiles, and that is done here. So that is in different mass spins, again, looked at the profiles, and you can see here that the non-cool core clusters and cool core clusters here really have a significant different behavior in all the profiles, which are consistent, which is other independent what measures you do. And again, that is something which really is very difficult to obtain in simulations, and there are not many simulations which really manage to get this dichotomy correctly. Now that reminds ones on that all the galaxies come in two flavors. And here another kind of provocative statement that basically galaxies are just small galaxy clusters, or vice versa, galaxy clusters are just very large galaxies. So again, in galaxies, if you look in the central part of the galaxy, of the halo of the galaxy, you have the stellar body, and there you typically have distinguished in early types or late types or morphological types, very similar than that galaxy clusters in the center are either cool core or non-cool core, and in the outsides they are very, very similar. And if you look, for example, at the distribution of matter, you see that in galaxies, in the central part, the stellar population takes over to the dark matter, and that is happening the same thing in galaxy clusters, where in the central part, in the BCGs, the stellar population is the dominant one in the density profile. And again, you can use that to infer how dark matter behaves, and you can ask there many questions. So at the end of the day, these systems are on one hand very similar in the sense of that very basic properties have very similar scalings. On the other hand, of course, there's a huge difference between if you look at galaxies or this kind of ICM properties like cool core, non-cool core. But again, the whole thing is a very continuous distribution. So you can look, for example, at the dark matter concentration as function of the halo mass. And here the different colored points in the background are from simulations. And again, you combine various simulations with different resolutions to span here really a super large range in halo masses. And you get this kind of very continuous distributions. And all the features you see here is really that you have to take a certain simulation volume, which of course has only a small number of very massive halos for that simulation volume, and of course a lot of halos at the low mass. But so to speak, in principle, you get a very continuous distribution. And again, you can see that the color code here is what is called the fossil nest, so basically a measure of the dynamical stage of the system. So if you have a very dominant central stellar body, or if you are in this merging state where you have several substructures in your object which are defining your stellar bodies. And again, that is working on galaxies as well as galaxy clusters. And in principle, you see also overlaid with observations that the bulk part here is hitted by the simulations quite well. But you know, you want to do cosmology with these objects, and you already saw that they are very complex. So again, a reminding, and that is something which hopefully, again, is able to trigger some discussions. What in cosmology you do, you are just interested in the pure number of this object. So you have here the mass functions plotted at different redshifts. And you know that if you have different cosmologies, and again, here's an very old example, but that is kind of poster child example for having a cosmological constant or not. And you can see that the amount of galaxy clusters you have at different times here is dramatically different. So that is basically typically your concept why you want to use to count galaxy clusters for cosmology. However, if you look really in details, that is something which is very, very difficult. And that is just, again, a reminder from now very outdated and old simulations. But on the left side, you see simulations of a cosmological volume with various different ideas and models on what is the nature of dark energy. And on the right side, you see different cosmological boxes where the initial conditions have certain non-Gaussian components in their distributions. And all these parameters which went into the models here on both sides are far outside and much too large compared to recent constraints. So that are already outdated models, but you can see that the differences here are really, really small. So which means that if you really want to measure now cosmology with galaxy clusters, you have to understand them in very large detail and have to be able to attach masses to them in very much detail. So the question, of course, happens what in all these astrophysics processes, as you saw before, which are changing the galaxies, which are different for different simulations, how good can you assign masses to these individual objects? And to make it even more complex, so here is one of these very high resolution simulations of performing galaxy cluster, and an additional here, the white stuff is the Mach numbers you see for shocks, and you can see how the gaseous atmosphere here starting and how this merging process is driving turbulence and non-thermal phenomena. And that simulation is even a pure non-radiative. So there's no extra physics, it's just the gas added to the dark matter. And you can see already how complex the internal structures of the intercluster medium is here. And you can nicely see that all the structures which are falling in are driving very nice shock features, which you typically see in radio as radio halos or radio relics. Clusters might relax a little bit in between, but then there are additional mergers. And you can see that there are a lot of these structures appearing, and all these shocks you see are basically the main driver of thermalization of the intercluster medium. So also you might assume hydrostatic equilibrium at a certain point or to a certain extent. You have always to be aware that the thermalization is really driven by these huge shocks here, which are shocking the material, and not by the very far outside accretion shocks. And even more interesting is you can see here that a lot of these shocks are crossing each other. So you have even the situation of colliding shocks and pushing back even the real shock to much further distance. And that is basically something very interesting from this even very simple simulation, which you can immediately learn, something which is of course clear, but you can show with this simulation even more nicely. So that is the distribution of the Mach numbers here. Low Mach numbers to the left, so that are the internal shocks, and high Mach numbers to the right, so that are the external accretion shocks. And you can see here, early time in the universe, of course, you are dominated by these accretion shocks to the object, but then as soon as you go on in time, you more and more get shocks here in the low Mach numbers. That is all the internal shocks. And that means also that the accretion shock here, which you can see here, which is this kind of layer or the boundary of the cluster, of the intercluster medium, is far beyond the real radius, which is a white circle here. And again, that is just because the internal shocks are colliding with the real shock and pushing it even further back. And you can look at that even as evolution of time. So you can see how from the early times on, the internal shocks are really pushing back the accretion shock compared to the real radius of the object as shown here. Now, even more interesting, these colliding shocks, you can ask, is that something which is of interest or not, or is it just in the simulation? But there are cases like that one is a recent observation of a cluster where you have this very strange contact discontinuity at very large distance. So you have here the contact discontinuity in the cluster, which is at 1.7 megaparsec from the center. And one idea could be that this is kind of famous sloshing of the gas, like you can imagine a wine glass and the stuff inside that, so that the atmosphere of the cluster is doing this. But it's very difficult to explain that at this very large radius, because it would mean that the time scale to drive that is super large. And the interesting thing is that if you look at these colliding shocks, and you can make a very simple analytical model here to investigate that, that you expect exactly such a contact discontinuity to be present after an shock, internal shock overtakes the accretion shock. And again, you can look on if you're able to reproduce this kind of observation. And this interesting thing is that you can find something which looks very similar from this kind of configuration, and which would have time scales which are much, much shorter and therefore are much more easy to produce. Now, does it still work to use clusters given that they are so complex? So on one hand, yes. So if you assume hydrostatic equilibrium and you can construct mass, So there are galaxy clusters where you can reconstruct the total mass of the galaxy cluster with various different models, from dynamical modeling of the galaxies over weak lensing or hydrostatic equilibrium from X-rays, and you get consistent answers. So in that sense, it's you still, even if it's so complex, it seems that you can go around that. But on the other hand, there are current observations, when you compare to the simulations, telling that in principle, you get this kind of non-thermal pressure support here in the cluster over a large range of radii, but the simulations all point to a kind of larger values, which is in the observations only reached in really merging systems. So that is pointing towards that the simulation still needs some dissipative mechanisms or some additional physics, which even does this kind of very simple velocity field in the cluster. And again, that's already still even without any kind of this additional physics. So there's a large thing here which is still open, namely, what are the general properties of the intercluster medium in terms of viscosity and heat transport and many of these things. So that is something which has to be included in the simulation in much further. So I'm realizing that I'm very slow and I should be very brief because we want to have a discussion. So unfortunately, I will now skip here even the stuff which I wanted to show you on protoclusters and just go to the conclusion so that you have enough time to ask questions. And while scanning here, so the protocluster thing, one important thing here is really that it's not so easy to link protoclusters to the most massive structures today, because what you ever see in a protocluster in high redshift is really only a very small portion of the cluster which is to form. And when you look at that, then you find a lot of protoclusters which are very dominant at high redshift and then very non-dominant in low redshift. And one example is, for example, also the opposite. When we look at a constraint simulation, for example, for Puma, and look at Puma is one of the most massive clusters in our neighborhood, and look what is that halo at, let's say, redshift of 3-ish or so, defines that at redshift 3, that halo is the progenitor of Puma, is that something which is not very dominant in their field. But that is something you might ask in the question. So I stop here to not overdo the time. Sorry that I was speaking too slow.
Thank you. Thank you, Klaus. Feel this very, very nice journey across the complex life of clusters. Is there any question or comment already? Well, maybe waiting for
Hello. Question.
Please.
Yeah.
Sure.
Hey.
Please.
Hey, Klaus. So I had a question regarding the mass concentration relation. So there have been papers recently showing that the concentration can go up. There is an upturn on a large mass. And it's not clear really to what it could be linked. So could you comment on this?
There are two interesting things. So the upturn is, I think, let me see if I can go back to the plot. There are various different aspects of the whole discussion. So the first paper which got this upturn was using a different method and therefore was, I would say, not trustable in that sense, because the point is that when you fit with an NFW profile to the cluster and you know that it's not a perfect fit, it's only approximative average fit, but not a good fit to every individual cluster. Now, what people sometimes do is then, because fitting the NFW profile might be a little bit too complex and difficult, you can use some relations you derive assuming it's an NFW and fit for that. And therefore you introduce biases. And the other thing is that if you look at here at the plot, for example, at the color code here, which is describing the dynamical age of the system. The problem is that you see here clear systematics across your box, because if whatever box you have, whatever simulation volume you have, the largest objects are typically things which are forming in a very special way. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very careful. So we tried that. So if you look at individual simulations, you might always get here kind of upturn in your volume, but that is just because the population of clusters at the high mass end is very much biased to very special formation histories. I think you see it here even a little bit by eye, right? If you look at this kind of blob here and think on how to fit through, and you look at the next larger simulation, which covers even a larger volume, then you see that here you might get, or you could be led to say it's flattening, but then if you extrapolate down here to that, you again are on the same track. So what we did is when we fitted that, we introduced this additional parameter of the relaxation of the cluster. And what is interesting then is that you get, so to speak, through this additional parameter, you get an offset in your mass concentration relation, but then the scatter around this concentration in the bins of same, so to speak, dynamical age of the systems is very symmetric.
Okay. And so it continues going down, or?
Yes, at least for the current cosmology. We did a test where we used 15 different cosmologies, and indeed there you find cosmologies where that relation gets very flat, and you might see even an inversion. Mm-hmm. But again, that's then very much cosmology dependent, and again tells you that in that cosmology, the clusters at that mass range are really very exotic beasts.
Okay, thank you. Carlo, you've left?
Carlo, are you here? Oh, or maybe he's not here anymore.
We lost our chair?
Yeah, I think
yes. We
okay, so do you have a question? Maybe someone else has.
I think Elena has one on the chat.
So hello, thank you, Darak, for the very, very nice talk. So I have a question, perhaps a bit technical. So regarding the clusters. So you said in one of your last slides that you have a mean R500 that is about 1.5 megaparsec, 1.2 megaparsec, if I remember correctly. Currently, I'm analyzing the simulation, the box 2 of Magneticum. Mm-hmm. And just looking at the file, I see that the mean radius is 0.3 megaparsec. So I was wondering if perhaps in the cluster catalogs, there are also the groups that are included. And
Yes. So in the catalogs, so to speak, I think that's maybe a kind of naming issue. So basically, you typically call halos clusters and subhalos galaxies.
I see, okay.
So it should be more halos and subhalos, but...
Okay, so when you measure this R500 that you just mentioned, how did you proceed? So you went to the galaxy catalog and then you redefined cluster on that?
No, it's so to speak, the identification of structures in simulations typically work like that. So you first find this kind of overdensed regions.
Yes.
So by assuming a density contrast you would expect from realization. So you identify all these things, and then that is basically your halos. And then you look within these regions of local overdensities, and that is classified as substructures.
Okay. Okay, I see. Thank you.
Hello, this is Arturo Núñez. If nobody else has a question, I'm going to take the mic now. I do have a question about how do you define the boundary of clusters? Is it only this R500, which is, if I remember correctly, should be like the radius at which your spherical density reaches 500 times some reference density, say the critical density of the universe? Or have you tried some sort of dynamical measurements of the boundary of your halo?
No, that's a very good question, and so to speak, I would even be a little bit more provocative in answering in that. So basically, there is no real boundary of clusters.
Yeah, that's what I was fearing.
So and therefore, so to speak, what people are using a kind of technical or theoretical recipes to define a cluster, right? So the classical thing is the classical real radius, which is defined by you have a spherical model, top head collapse, and that is telling you in this kind of model what is the typical density contrast at the radius on which you expect realization. And that is your real radius, and then you have a fit to that, and that you use as a real radius. And that is in the ancient De Sitter, that was the typical 200, but in lambda CDM, it's a slightly different value, and it depends on cosmology and redshift.
Yeah, but
and then there are other operational definitions which are using then, let's say, R500, just that is coming, I guess, mostly from X-rays, because in X-rays you cannot go so far out, so you use the kind of higher density contrast because you wanted to constrain the smaller regions. But that are all kind of technical definitions, and no one of that is respecting any kind of real physical motivated definition, because as you see, even when you take the real radius, which is basically what would be the classical realized region, first of all you can check if the real equilibrium is holded at that region, and if you look in simulations, that's on average is done, but there's at least a factor 2 or so, I would say, in the real ratio, which is the scatter at that region. So on average, yeah, you are realized there, but individually or locally, there can be large differences. And then if you look, for example, at the intercluster medium, as you see here, you see that the region at which the accretion shock is colliding with the atmosphere, which would be another definition of the real region, right? Because that is the point where the intercluster medium is thermalized, at least in large fraction, is even further out. And then I think what people now understood is that if you take the infall region or the splashback region or so, that is a much more natural boundary of the cluster in terms of the physical processes which are happening, but it's even further out and difficult to measure. Mm. And to be even more provocative on that, whatever you define now as a boundary is only a kind of at the moment boundary, because these structures will grow. And the interesting thing is that given the rough cosmology or the cosmology we think we are living in, basically they are very distinct regions which will be collapsed. So if you would go in the future and then further in the future several Hubble times, then you would have only spherical regions which are displaced, and there's no exchange and no collapse any longer. Mm. But these are typically regions which are even basically this what you call superclusters, because that are regions which in principle would still collapse to one object in the future. But that would be something which is very clear in definition, because that would be the kind of Lagrangian volume of the universe which, so to speak, on long hand will collapse into one object.
Okay.
But all other definitions are really kind of operational definitions which can be used to compare different things. But one should be always aware that these operational definitions are just operational definitions, and many differences we see in cosmology or so. So for example, if you take the cluster count and the cluster masses, they of course strongly depend on what is your operational definition of mass. And so to speak, differences in different cosmology you see in these operational differences might not be true, but true physical differences, because if you would ask what is the final mass of that region in so to speak, for the limit of infinite time, they might be the same in the different cosmologies. It's just that given the time at which you measure now and given an operational definition, it makes differences. I'm not saying you cannot use it for cosmology, but you have to be always very, very careful on what difference in your measurements is driven by your operational definition and what is really a physical driven difference. And there's a lot of people which are looking on self-similar evolution and trying to understand what is the best measure to stay self-similar and things like that.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you.
Any other comment or question?
So maybe I have another one. So still me and Arturo changing.
Please.
Just to continue on the answer you just gave. So for cosmological analysis, would you suggest to use a more dynamical definition of structures, maybe based on like the Hessian of the potential? So following Zeldovich's theory for the structures?
Well, I'm not a hardcore cosmologist, so unfortunately, I think there is no real good definition on whatever you use. So the point from the simulation here I would like to make is that it's you have to be careful because of the definition, and there's an additional complications on that is that different definition can have different meanings even. So suppose you're talking about one galaxy cluster, and now you want to assign a mass to it depending on if you take M500, M200, M100, or whatever you do. But the underlying assumption in that thing is that it's one object which you just give different labels in mass. But now imagine you have a kind of merging cluster in the early phase. So if you would be strict and just as an operational definition place on the simulations that you want to use M500, that might be two clusters. And only if you go to M100, that thing is only one object. And then you have to be very careful when you compare now these measurements based on this operational definition with your theory expectation, because in theory, is your theory made on that you have two objects in one case and one object in the other case, or is your theory only one object and again you give different labels? I'm not sure if it was.
See, this is exactly my problem. So I'm trying to compare a definition of clusters that is based on T-web, so on the potential, with the other definition of clusters, so more astrophysically based. So I use R500, R200. And the problem is exactly this. So also because the T-web that I'm using is based on a grid, so I have to define a grid on the simulation and then interpolate density field. Yeah. What happens is normally that I tend to merge more than one cluster into one structure in the T-web. So when I compute purity and completeness of my catalog, then I don't have good values.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
Yeah, so to go back to basically the first point of your question, I think it would be, in theory at least, beneficial to start to compare distribution functions of continuous values instead of counts on kind of cutted values.
Okay. Okay. But
again, that is then very difficult in measurement and it has other problems. But as you said, if you take TVEP and things like that, that's a step towards doing kind of continuous distribution functions and not individual counts, so to speak, which depend on whatever threshold or boundary you place.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
Well, I had also two questions, but we are definitely running out of time, so maybe we can be in touch for later, unless there are some other urgent comment or question from people still attending. Again, I apologize for the issue we had for the connection. If not, I want to thank you again.
In case I have still some time, so if people want to stay to ask questions for me, that would be.
Oh, please, yes. The Zoom room is a reserved. So maybe for all the technical questions that for sure Elena has, we can stay connected. And so maybe we can stop recording here. Just I want to advertise for the people still present next week. We will have a cafe club by Barbara Catinella talking about the galaxy evolution with H1 surveys. So thank you again, everybody. And please stay connected if you have